Hello, I'm Paul Scott, and today I'm interviewing William Hindmarch, the CEO of AIM-listed BOTB. The ticker is also BOTB. So welcome, William, and thanks very much for joining me.
Hi, Paul. Good to see you. Well, good to hear you, so to speak.
Yeah, it was nearly 3 years ago we last spoke, amazingly.
Incredible, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. So I better just quickly do the disclaimer then.
Sure.
I'm not charging a fee for doing this, and I've continuously held shares personally in the company for about 4 or 5 years. So thank you for the dividend.
Register. Yep.
Yeah, no, thank you for the dividends as well. I was looking actually over the last 4 years, you've paid out 69p in total dividends.
Yeah, if I was trying to do a quick sort of look at sort of overall return, because I guess in the end, you know, whether it's capital or dividend or whatever, you know, in the end comes an overall return. And I think we've done about sort of circa 18% annually has been a sort of rough sort of, you know, return on a sort of consistent basis, because there's quite a lot gone back in dividend over time.
No, it's great. So thank you very much for the dividends. I'm much appreciated.
It's been put to good use.
Yeah, well, I've recycled a fair bit in buying supercar tickets.
Even better. That's the virtuous circle. I love that.
It is. Okay, so I've crowdsourced these questions from my Stockopedia readers.
Sure.
So let's crack on with those. Now, the first one I don't really want to ask because I don't want to put ideas into your head. But one of my readers said, what's the benefit of having a stock market listing given that there's such a small free float, and have you considered taking it private?
Sure. We're very pro the listing. You know, it's a question I get asked a lot, actually. But we've always been very... Firstly, I think, you know, it'd be worth people knowing that we run the listing very leanly, both in terms of a cost and in terms of management time, very deliberately, because we're aware of these things. You could spend all day, you know, meeting investors, you know, doing lots of stuff. We don't do huge amounts of that. So we keep it, you know, pretty focused to two core periods deliberately, this interview, notwithstanding this interview, you know, make sure that we don't spend too much on it. So it doesn't take huge amounts of our time. Obviously, it provides us with access to capital should we need it, which, you know, at the moment, there's a fair point to say we're not using that. But also, I think in the future, if we want to do acquisition, or indeed if we wanted to partner up with someone in terms of either some sort of acquisition type thing, I think it provides a great transparency to the business. So, you know, we're very comfortable where we are at the moment.
Great. Okay. Yeah, I mean, speaking personally for me, I mean, I've got a reasonable size position in the company now for relative to my portfolio, and it would be an absolute disaster if it was taken private, because I'd be forced to sell a lot of them. So
Understand that. Yeah, so completely. Yeah. So, yeah.
Brilliant. That's good. Now, I think I didn't make a note of which reader asked these questions, so I can't reference their names, but the next question is, do you have any plans to improve liquidity in the shares?
In short, no, which may be not the answer they want to hear. But you know, in order to improve liquidity, I've got to raise money, which, you know, we're not looking to do at the moment, or we've got to sell, or someone's got to sell some shares. And I think generally, you know, myself included, are very happy to, you know, want to grow the business and think there's lots to do. So that doesn't make you want to sell them. So I don't think, you know, I can't see any huge change in that. I think I've said to you before, however, I do feel that liquidity is a function of price. And if we can continue to do well, continue to grow the business, both in terms of revenues, profits, et cetera, hopefully we'll get share price appreciation. And then at some point, you know, someone will say, well, great, well, I bought in at X, so I'm, you know, happy to sell at Y and give someone else a chance. So I do feel that as the, you know, the valuation increases, that should lead to more liquidity, hopefully. So, you know, I think that will be a natural thing, you know, to go that way.
Okay. Looking next then at growth, I was just reading up on your last set of accounts before calling you, and I think the online growth was about 23%. 23% online growth for the year ending 30th of April 2018, which is pretty impressive. And I mean, the closure of the physical sites has masked strong online growth, hasn't it?
It's been a bit of a mixed picture, and probably will continue to be a bit from an accounting point of view for a while in terms of, you know, absolute sort of online sales growth.
So what sort of growth rates are you aiming for now that the business has almost completely gone online?
Well, again, I have to be a little bit sort of, you know, in terms of forecasting with you know, our sort of FinCap broker, et cetera. So, you know, I've been a little bit tricky here trying to give forecasts. You know, we want to continue to drive the online hard and, you know, give some you know, strong growth to that. I think we've got some good marketing going on and some good plans for the future. In terms of absolute forecasting, a little bit tricky for me to do at the moment.
Yeah.
In terms of actually giving those numbers, especially quite close to our period end.
Yeah, understood. And there is a FinCap note. I think the most recent note, I was just looking at it, was dated 20th of June 2018.
Yes,
they seem to be forecasting quite low revenue growth, so I'd be looking for a beat on that, but I know you can't comment on that.
Sure.
exactly. moving swiftly on.
I'm sorry to be a bit politician about that, but you'll understand why. Yeah.
Yeah, no, myself and the readers understand the rules, so that's fine. Yeah. Now, could you outline the rationale for pulling out of the physical airport sites, which you're best known for, I think?
Yes, I can. I mean, you know, it was with a heavy heart in some ways, just from a personal point of view, but I think for the business going forward, they provided us a great, you know, they were what we were known for. There's no doubt about, you know, they gave us great visibility. However, as the business evolved, two things were happening. Firstly, the operation of those airports was getting more and more expensive, a bit like I think you'd probably see with retailers across the high street and other places. The sheer costs of rentals, staff costs, you know, health and safety, all those sorts of bits and pieces that go with that were just going up and up and up and up. And so it was, secondly, we were finding that we could acquire customers more effectively online. So we could get those same customers at a cheaper rate effectively through the internet. The third thing, which I think was quite important, is as the business model has changed, you'll remember that we've been gradually pulling down prices over the years to make it a more accessible online proposition. So tickets going from, you know, what were, you know, £30-40 down to £2 or £3 these days. That works very well online because there's obviously a large addressable market. However, in an airport, when there are only a certain number of people going through every day, previously you could only speak to a certain number of people each day. If those tickets are £20 or £30, which actually in an airport people are sort of almost happy to spend, you don't have to speak to too many of them. But when the tickets are £2 or £3, you almost just can't physically process enough transactions to get the revenue high enough. So really, we either had to sort of say, are we building an online business and have the product that is right for the online, or are we, you know, having an airport business? And I think we were very much preferring the online version to go that way. So it really was a sort of, it was just a change in the business model that didn't fit airports quite as well, coupled with the fact that the operational costs and management time of running those airports was getting increasingly fun.
I was going to ask you about management time, actually, because obviously BOTB is a very small company with only a small number of staff. So whenever I went to airports and saw the supercars there and, you know, very bored-looking staff just sort of sitting there. Well, I mean, the staff turnover must have been very high. It must have been an absolute hassle to manage these airport sites, I'm assuming. Right.
I mean, every business has got, you know, we don't sell fresh food. So, you know, every business has its challenges. Staffing, especially in a high security environment, is hard because if someone goes, it can take a long time to get the security clearance to get another one. And when you're running small teams, i.e., you know, two or three people, losing one, or if two, can almost halve your workforce and suddenly you're incredibly short. At the same time, you can't overstaff it because there's nothing for them to do. So there was some turnover, inevitably. We also had some people who worked for us for 14 or 15 years in the airports.
Really?
So, you know, there were some very old timers who had been there. But it's, you know, and what I also found as well is just giving, as we had more and more of them, you know, when you first start, you can give a lot more face time from sort of me personally. But I couldn't sort of travel around the country all the time doing that. So although we had sales directors, et cetera, it just wasn't probably quite as efficient as it used to be.
Yeah, okay. Right. Another reader asks, he's saying he's uncertain about how to view BOTB shares because he's basically saying, should I see it as a cash cow that pays out great dividends or is it a growth stock?
I think you should see it as both, personally. You know, I don't think he should see it as possibly the speculative share that might return him, you know, 20 times, you know, next week because it's some sort of great new technology. I think we've got lots to go for. You know, the sort of the area that we're in, which is sort of competition, lottery, sort of, you know, gaming sort of area, is a very interesting market. There's lots and lots of scope for growth, I think. But I think, you know, you know, as you know, we are a business that is highly management owned and highly incentivized to deliver a long-term sustainable return for its shareholders. You know, we are not going to go and, you know, bet everything on, you know, an idea or a strategy that we think will work. We will gradually wind into it, which I think we're demonstrating as we go forward, you know, so that we can deliver sustainable returns, not, you know, the potential for incredible returns, but also the potential for no returns. So it's a gradual winding up that we're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, rereading your results this afternoon, I was struck by how, with the online marketing, it's I've been a little bit frustrated over the last couple of years. We've had this conversation before,
but
the growth,
yeah, yeah,
you haven't sort of pushed harder and maybe run at a loss for a year or two and to really, really soup up the growth. But reading the results today, it seems as if you're sort of testing and learning on which marketing channels are working. And I think you're saying that you're going to increase the marketing budget 40%
now that
you've found what works. And that actually seems quite a smart strategy.
Yeah, so, you know, marketing budget to 17-18, 1.7 million. It's marketing sort of slightly more. Sort of some of the areas we talk about, excluding some of the airports and various other bits and pieces. But, yeah, going up to just under 3 million. So, you know,
actually
sort of, yeah. So, you know, sort of, you know, these are sort of, you know, quite big increases. And, you know, we find that even channels that work well don't work well. It's not, I wish it was as easy as this one works, just throw lots of money at it. You know, they work, but then they do have a point of diminishing returns, and then you switch to the next one, and then you push that one harder. And it's a constant sort of, you know, test and learn and moving, really. You know, we did a TV advert recently, which was more sort of lifestyle-led, and then we changed it 6 months or so ago to something that was much more just about the winners. And, you know, here is a sort of bit more real and a little less polished, actually, quite deliberately. And, you know, suddenly we get a much, much, much better return on that advert. So it's about, you know, testing and learning the whole time, and then winding the budget up in a controlled fashion. You know, we're starting to spend quite big numbers in terms of marketing now.
Yes.
And we've got to get it right. So, you know, we do it that way.
Yes, okay. And another reader touched on marketing and was saying, have you grown your marketing team internally, or have you brought in sort of digital marketing experts from outside?
We have been growing the marketing team internally quite a lot, actually. So we have, you know, continued to add heads to that. We do a mixture, actually, of internal, you know, stuff, as well as bringing in experts from different areas. So, you know, we will work with specialists in retargeting, for example, or in TV, but we do some of the stuff in-house. And I tend to find, you know, but what we don't do is say, right, you know, we'll have one person here who deals with a marketing agency and they do it all for us. We've never found that works in terms of, you know, the returns you get. They just don't look after you as well as you do yourself. But we do try and bring in expertise, you know, for these, you know, there's always new technologies coming out the whole time. So we do bring expertise when we need it.
Okay. Next question on risks. What's the biggest risk to your business?
I think these days it's around IT, actually, funny enough. We are very reliant on, obviously, the sales through the internet. You know, the airports were more consistent when there were more of them, and even if there was a problem at one airport, like a security alert or something like that, you know, there were lots of airports to sort of mask that. Whereas now we are, you know, more or less, not completely yet, but more or less pure play online. And our sales are quite shaped towards the end of the week. And so a sort of server outage or something on a Sunday can actually be pretty expensive for us. So that is something that we obviously look to manage and actually insure against it from physical insurance, but insure against it in terms of procedure. But you can never completely cover that off in terms of, you know, fail over and fail over and fail over and back up and back up. But it's a question of how much money you spend trying to cover those bases. So I think that is a bit of a risk, probably to any online business these days, I guess.
Yeah, and I suppose people, hackers, stealing your customer details and then trying to...
Same as any online business, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So we have to, you know, protect against all of that, as every business does. The whole GDPR piece, you know, had to be sort of taken care of as well recently. So there are all those, you know, threats that you have. But I always come back to the fact that we don't sell fresh food. So
yeah,
everyone has their problems. So, you know, then the fridge breaks down and you've had it. So
And an outage, you know, might only be a few hours, mightn't it, till you're back up and running, presumably. So
yes,
not,
and we
not
have
the end of the world.
Mirrored databases and all that sort of thing. So,
Okay, great. I don't think you'll be able to answer this one, but I'll ask it anyway. one of the readers asks, what's the payout ratio each week in terms of tickets sold versus cost of the prizes?
Sure. Well, as you know, we are a skill-based competition, not a sort of, you know, a payout ratio-based sort of gambling business. So it's a very different concept, actually, and varies enormously on a week-by-week basis. So there is no ratio, effectively, because we cannot control that in terms of what's won. So, yes, you're right. I can't really answer that. You know, there are some weeks where our ratio will be negative because you know, we will give away a very, very expensive prize.
That was going to be the next question, actually. I mean, how do you manage that risk?
That?
Yeah,
well,
how do you manage that risk of giving away a 200 grand car when you wanted to give away a 40 grand car?
Well, we manage, well, we can and we can't manage that. I mean, in the end, you know, if by sheer bad luck, so to speak, lots and lots of £200,000 cars are won, you know, that is what we offer and we have to make good on that. So, you know, that we can't manage that risk completely. We can insure against it, and we've touched on that in some of the really expensive cars in the past. But actually, we prefer to sort of self-insure because of it's quite expensive. We can manage it to a certain extent. I mean, it is self-managing in the fact that the more expensive cars are more expensive tickets. So, you know, in theory, you are taking more money if people are buying those cars. At the same time, they are quite expensive tickets, so less people might buy them. So statistically, that will reduce it a bit as well. We can also, to a certain extent, focus the marketing in on the sort of cars that we probably would rather give away. So, you know, our sweet spot is probably around the sort of £70,000, £80,000 car. You know, highly desirable, but not sort of crazy, if I can put it that way. So, you know, the email marketing and the comms that you might get are more focused in on those cars. But we also have to keep the excitement. You know, we want people to see the amazing cars. In fact, we like the amazing cars being won because, you know, if it's just, you know, a sort of mid-range, boring car being won every week, it's not very exciting. We do need, you know, the really cool cars to be won. We had a great AMG GT the other day. You know, that's what makes people excited. That's what makes people think, well, you know, I want to have a go at that.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. Was I mean, the AMG GT is just a stunning looking car, isn't it? I mean,
sure,
when I saw somebody had won one, I logged in and bought about £20 worth of tickets.
do need those. You know, it can be managed to a certain extent, but you know, it's all about excitement. I'm sure the same with the lottery or anything like that. When they have a big winner, you know, that's what makes people think, well, that could be me. So we like good cars being won because you know, that's what makes people excited.
Yeah, and you've got plenty of cash to cover
a considerable
run of paying us, haven't you?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, the only thing that can affect, sort of, you know, because we have the period ends, is it can make our sort of financial reporting a little bit lumpy sometimes because, you know, you can be sort of on track, and then if you had either lots of cheap cars that went in the last month of your financial period, you could suddenly have a, you know, quite a lot higher profit than you were thinking you were going to have.
Yes.
Vice versa, you could have a bit lower. So it can make the sensitivities around that year end a little tricky to do. But, you know, we've had quite a lot of experience in managing that now, so we're fairly relaxed with it.
Okay, cool. Let's just touch on international growth. And I suppose there are two aspects to that, aren't there? They're selling tickets internationally for the UK competition. Mm-hmm. And secondly, any almost franchise or separate operations overseas. So, over to you on that.
Yeah, sure. So I think there is an opportunity here. We've been starting to look at this, and it's definitely on our agenda going forward. You know, the difficulty for overseas people into the sort of UK competition is, of course, that they are primarily UK winners. So, you know, that can be tricky if they don't sort of, you know, they can't understand why that they would just be UK winners, but they will be because virtually all the tickets will be from UK winners.
Yes.
We are also looking at doing some other countries and, you know, spending some more marketing money in other places. So I think probably watch this space on that. That's definitely something that is on our agenda.
Great. Next, just this is fairly boring, so we'll probably keep this brief. Just on the regulatory and tax position, and the VAT. I know you probably can't. So the VATs have paid you over $4 million, haven't they?
They have.
They've lodged a claim against you to recoup some of that, as I understand it.
Exactly that. Yeah.
Do we have an idea on timescales?
I wish. I'd love to get off my desk, to be honest. not, well, we are working through it as per the last announcement, and you summarised it exactly right. You know, we are seeking legal advice, we are working through it and trying to, you know, get the best result for the company.
Okay.
You know, slightly, it's not the fastest process because it's dealing with HMRC and it's slightly complex in areas. So, you know, we've got to just work it through. So it'll come through. I wish I knew. I don't honestly know the answer to that.
Okay. And then another reader's asked about dividend strategy. Given that the regular dividends are very, very small, but then these dumping great big special dividends come out. So I think you paid six big special dividends in the last 4 years. So he's just saying, what's the strategy on this? And couldn't you kind of smooth it out a bit more?
I'd like to know your view on this as well, actually. And, you know, our brokers have spoken to us about this a little bit as well. I think if we paid a larger regular dividend, the shares could well be re-rated a bit on that because they will look like they've got a better yield. On the flip side, so I get that completely. On the flip side, the sort of flexibility that it gives us, you know, we, from a management point of view, we don't pay ourselves huge salaries, which I think is in the interest of the shareholders. So we try and reflect, you know, the good work in terms of in dividends. So everyone shares rather than, you know, just management taking out bigger bonuses and salaries and, you know, not. So I think it's, you know, very well aligned in terms of the way we work. And if I was I'm an investor in a way, but if I was an investor, you know, I think, well, that's great. You know, they're not taking out a massive bonus if they do well. They're paying out a dividend of which we all share. So I sort of think that works quite well. Having said that, you know, bonuses are generally paid on good performance and are subject to the company doing well. So I guess those specials are slightly in that same sort of category in a way, which makes it hard. You know, what we don't want to be tied into something where if we don't have quite such a good year, you know, a bit like if you're management, well, if you didn't do well, you don't get your bonus. That's how it works. Mm. So, you know, I guess it's a little bit tied into that. So I think it gives us flexibility. Although I could see how, you know, maybe even if there was a halfway house where we sort of, you know, raised it.
Yeah.
You know, not crazily, but was a little bit more generous. So people say, well, okay, that's a, you know, sensible yield, and then we might get some specials on top. I you know, that could be a sensible way to go in the future.
That was what I was going to suggest, actually. I think the maybe just rebalancing it a bit would be good. Yeah. But personally speaking, I absolutely love receiving the dividends. I'm very grateful for them.
What sort of yield would you expect? What would you be liking to receive?
I don't know. I haven't really thought it through, to be honest. But I think a sort of halfway house type arrangement between what you're currently doing, I think it seems sound sensible to me.
When you look at all the research and all the reports, our yield doesn't look remotely exciting because they never include the specials.
That's right.
And so for the you know, the untrained eye, so to speak, you know, you're thinking the share doesn't yield very much at all. But of course, actually, as you know and I know, it actually is a pretty strong yield. But it doesn't probably come out in the headlines.
And I was just going back to the marketing thing as well. I suppose the advantage of having the marketing costs as your biggest expense after the costs of the prizes, I guess, is that you can flex that up and down, can't you?
Hugely,
If we go into a recession, you could cut that right back if you wanted to.
100%. I mean, not all of it, but probably, think of the number here, probably 75% of that could be turned off, you know, within a week or two. Some of it overnight, but there's things like just TV bookings, you know, you book a month ahead. So, yes, if we wanted to, you know, cut our market, I mean, you know, we're always investing for the future. So that hits our profitability the whole time because it's a lifetime value model. So if we wanted to make short-term profits, you know, we could make much bigger profits in the short term, but of course we wouldn't be investing.
Sacrifice
for
growth.
So, you know, it's a balance of how hard you press the accelerator, but that's always going to hit you in the short term. You know, if you increase your marketing budget from, you know, 3 to 5, you're just going to put you very negative in the short term. We're trying to produce a steady graph.
We've got two more questions from the readers. Is there any merit to bringing in a large strategic investor to increase the scale of the business, say one of the, you know, really big gambling groups?
I think absolutely. I think we've touched on the past about you know, how more players would produce, you know, more profits effectively. So I think there definitely are going to be some conversations there, you know, in the future. You know, whether they're tying up with us or whether they're, you know, integrating with us more deeply. You know, I think there are advantages there without doubt. So you know, you can never quite tell when these things come around the corner, but I do see some potential for that certainly.
Okay, great. And final blog reader question is on the revised pricing strategy. You've lowered the ticket price, I think, by about 70%, which is a very bold move. Mm-hmm. Has that worked out or not?
Yes.
Great.
In short, yeah, it has. It's increased our revenues. It's put our cost of sale up a bit. Revenues have definitely improved as a result of it, no doubt. But also, in line with that, the costs have gone up because, now you can get a really good car for not much money. So if your ticket price is, 30p between getting between a BMW M3 or a Porsche, that used to be maybe £3 or £4 to go the difference. You might say, I'll just get the BMW. Whereas now it could be like 50p difference. You're like, what the hell, I'll just have the Porsche. So it's made those more expensive cars pretty accessible, which is great because that's exactly what we wanted people to do, to think, well, geez, I can really have my dream here rather than having to sort of cut back a bit. So it's pushed the cost of sale a bit. More going out the door that way, but it's driven revenues at the same time. Also, just to sort of obviously remark we haven't touched on was we've launched this lifestyle competition.
Oh, yes.
Which really is encompassing sort of watches, holidays, sort of gadgety type items,
motorbikes, and that's
been interesting actually. We've getting some good traction there. A lot of people playing both competitions, mm-hmm. almost 80% of people playing both, which is great. And I think opens up to a different audience. We're just starting to play with the sort of marketing strategy on that because it is going after a slightly different demographic. So some encouraging signs there in terms of moving that forward. Appetite from people to play other things.
That's covered all the reader questions. I just had a couple of ideas and suggestions more than anything here.
Great.
I always throw wacky ideas at you. Most of them are rubbish. I had a look on the App Store to try and find an app to download. I couldn't find it.
And
the spot the ball thing doesn't really work very well on mobiles anyway, does it?
No.
Is there any merit in you coming up with a variety of different style of competitions and putting apps out there to just grab a bigger market share effectively?
Well, I can tell you I came from a meeting about that this morning, and I've got a meeting with an app company tomorrow. No sort of promises on that, but, yes, we are. We had an app originally. We rebuilt all the website, and the app has been slow following just because we've just been sort of doing that. But we're committed to doing a new app, but at the same time, we are also looking at other entry sort of methods. The possible, you're rightly, 50% of our revenue comes from mobile now, amazingly.
And, is it?
Yeah, and I think the spot the ball process is harder to do on an app.
Definitely.
For sure. I think people would rather wait and use their desktop. So something that was just simple to do via an app, I think, would be a big step forward. So it's something we're investigating. There's quite a lot of, I won't bore you with all the detail of, the sort of ins and outs of how that all sort of works and competitions and this, that, and the other. So not quite as straightforward as it could be, but we're sort of working through those issues to sort of try and get to a good result, and we'll probably end up trying a few things on the smaller competitions just to see what works.
Yeah, great. And we talked before about performance marketing companies like XL Media, who set up these websites, fan websites for football and so on, pull people in and then essentially just sell them gambling services. I mean, is that not something you could do in-house if you used a sort of team of enthusiastic amateur contributors for creating video content and make? I mean, I know you've got a YouTube channel, but
affiliate marketing effectively.
Yeah, but isn't there scope for you to do that in-house maybe, even if it was football linked and cars linked, some sort of magazine website to generate a lot of flow?
Yeah, so we've been playing around with a few things like that. We had something called BATB TV, which has been a YouTube show that we've been doing, and we've now morphed that into something called In the Headlights.
Yes.
Which is a sort of exactly that. It's a sort of YouTube content-based sort of show, which is aimed to be not too salesy, but just to get users coming and then obviously sort of soft sell them into what we're doing. We also work a lot with influencers as part of our marketing. That is one of the big lines in the marketing budget these days, is working with sort of influencers who are constantly doing videos about cars. And I don't know if you follow all these guys, but the likes of Shmi150 and all those sorts of people who have huge followings on YouTube. And so we work closely with a lot of those.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I mean, the other thing, I was wondering if there was any way of linking these vloggers with a manufacturer, sort of getting, or a dealer, you know, and getting them to BMW, give them a car for the day, they rave about it, and then at the end, it also sponsored Win It Here through
BMW.
Well,
yeah, and we are doing that, to be honest. So we do that with, I mean, the vloggers are given the car, the big famous, which we also have an in-house vlogger called Tim Oldland, who, you know, on a smaller scale, but is doing exactly that. So he's loaned the cars by the manufacturers because they like the promotion. He will go out for a couple of days, do test drives and do video and all the rest of it, and then put those online and, you know, and also say, and by the way, you can win this in the competition. So, yeah, that's all.
You're already doing it. Sorry, so I haven't done that.
No, it's funny. It's interesting. I mean, you know, we have a big sort of social media following, you know, I think we've got now, was as of May, looking at my numbers here, we had, you know, just under 250,000, you know, Facebook fans, and sort of 50,000 on Instagram, etc. There's quite a lot behind the scenes when you really get into it beyond the website in terms of the social, the video, the blogging, all the rest of it, which is a real community in there. So,
oh, I'll do a bit of Googling and find all that stuff. Apologies, I haven't spotted it.
No, don't be silly. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, that covers everything I wanted to cover. Are there any sort of closing remarks you want to make, William? Anything we haven't touched on that you think is important?
No, I don't think so. I think most things have been covered, thank you, Paul. You know, I hope given enough sort of detail. As I said before, it's a little hard, you know, near sort of results time to be too specific, and, you know, we're also keen not to sort of, you know, oversell ourselves. I'm always conscious that, you know, we've got to do what we say and keep delivering, and I hope we've sort of done that. We're not trying to sort of, you know, ramp it up and then, you know, not succeed. So hopefully we can over-deliver rather than under-deliver. So that's the plan.
Great. Brilliant. All right. Well, I'm very happy, and I'll continue to be a long-term shareholder. So good luck with everything, and we'll speak hopefully, maybe not in 3 years' time, maybe a bit earlier.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, thanks so much, Paul. Appreciate your time. All the best.
Thanks for your time. Thanks, William.
Bye-bye. Bye.